The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there. I will see you.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal from WHFR.FM, the station making waves here at Henry Ford Community College with the all-volunteer student and alumni staff. And we're all about local news that is extremely local, Dearborn and the surrounding area. And, of course, very importantly, we're all about alternative views. Because you hear that mainstream stuff all over the place. But there are more opinions than just one or two. And we want to, prod your mind to think about all the ins and outs. In fact, there's never just two sides to every question. There's three, four, five, many more. And I guess that is one of the advantages of a call-in talk show, which we're not doing, sorry, folks, and that is that you do hear a lot of opinions. Unfortunately, with call-in shows, and people have asked, hey, why don't you do a call-in show? I want to call it. A lot of the people that call in, we have no way to check on whether or not your opinion is based on any sort of objective facts. It's nice for everyone to have their opinion, but if you have no way to support it, I mean literally, other than how you feel, I don't think that should be shared with the public as a whole, as if you did have evidence to prove what you're saying is true. So, I'm a print person. I'm based in reading essays and nonfiction books and several newspapers, not just one. And I highly recommend that approach to you, too. Sure, you'll get a lot of conflicting ideas, but that's the point. You can sort it out from all the facts that you see, the facts that seem the strongest, and then act accordingly, hopefully in a more appropriate way to resolve problems than otherwise. And here in the studio, I've got three of our WHFR news team for this week. I have Dennis Reimars, our newly appointed and former from a little while back, WHFR news director. Welcome back, Dennis.
Thank you. You know, I never let the facts get in the way of a really good story. Yeah. So I just try to kind of ride that wave.
Yeah, a lot of journalists will make that joke.
Excellent to be back. Thank you.
Oh, well, welcome. And so you're the new news director, and the old news director, Kevin Bruff, is with us today as part of our news team. So Welcome back to you, Kevin.
Oh, it feels good to be back, man. Thanks.
Okay. And so that means Dennis gets all the stories that are new. You get all the stories that are old. And what does that leave to Joe Sullivan? Our big band DJ is also part of our WHFR news team, as his schedule will permit. And let me just see if he's close enough there. Okay.
Do you have him pushed up?
I've got everything pushed up here, Dennis.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
As an old person, but so Joe, I want to thank you for the Buddy Holly story, which was a Broadway presentation, wasn't it?
Open in London.
Yeah, what do they know about Buddy Holly?
Well, he was very big over there.
Yeah.
And very big influence on all the British rockers, the Beatles, and others that they.
That's true. Yes, I knew that, sort of. So thank you for that. That's the kind of, you'd expect My Fair Lady, which is one of my favorite Broadway musicals from the past, but on WHFR. But Buddy Holly story, who else is featuring that sort of Broadway presentation? Okay, so that's our tradition here. And we're going to begin with the headline news. I wanted to start with, of course, as I usually do, we run over the Dearborn Press and Guide, the Sunday edition and the Wednesday edition from the last week, and also the Times Herald. Today is August the 24th, 2012, and so looking back on last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide from the 19th of August, they have a front page story there about how Dearborn Heights is part of a special election to replace Congressman Thaddeus McCotter, who decided to resign just a couple months before the end of his term. And this is a big problem for a lot of people because they're going to have to, according to our rules that are in place, the laws, they have to have this special election just for this purpose. And it's going to come up in the old District 11 that Cotter represents, which is not the same as the new District 11 borders area that's going to be part of the November election. And, of course, this District 11 person is going to be replaced by the next District 11 electee in November. And so this person, whoever it might be, is going to be serving only a couple of months. And I've read somewhere that this whole special election deal is going to cost the state of Michigan collectively $650,000. And, of course, somebody said to me yesterday, how can one election in just District 11 cost that much? And I'm thinking, well, there must be salaries involved. Maybe McCotter gets to keep his salary even though he resigned.
I want that job.
They got to start paying the new person. Because in Dearborn Heights, clerk over there who handles the elections, he stated it's going to cost the city of Dearborn Heights an additional $10,000, which he hopes to maybe economize and spread out somewhere else. But, so where's the other $640,000 coming? Dennis, have you heard any rumors about this over in Dearborn Heights? Dennis is also the Dearborn Heights cable TV coordinator over there.
No, not at all. In fact, it's basically what you said. The city clerk, Walter Prashevitz, he said it's going to cost the city $10,000. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a few people questioning where the rest of the money is going. They talked about paperwork. Right. We've talked about, like you said, salaries. There's a lot of things that go into this, but that's a lot of money.
I'm sure, the state of Michigan, the Secretary of State handles elections, that office would have to prepare the ballot somehow. There would be some paperwork to get that one single election. And how many people are in District 11? 100,000? I mean, Dearborn Heights didn't have that many people, but there's other communities around it, maybe some of Garden City and other contiguous areas. So I can't quite find out either. Here, interestingly, the Dearborn Times Herald from this last Wednesday, it doesn't usually do its own editorials, and shame on them. Come on, Bewicks, Scott and Michael, you've got ideas, and you're proud of them, I'm sure, so write some editorials. But your collective papers that are part of, some organization, that you feature other small, relatively small local presses. And this one from last Wednesday, the 22nd of August, Livingston Daily Press and Argus. Yeah, what's an Argus? Okay.
It's an animal. It's a furry animal from southern Australia.
I thought it was a newspaper term, though.
Oh, it probably is. I just totally made
so
that
although up. These newspaper guys don't know what an Argus is, but isn't it sort of a compass to tell you? I mean, isn't it another name for a paper? Would be an Argus. It's sort of a
helps you find your way.
Sounds helps like you a, find things.
Sounds like a pirate's name, doesn't it? Argus.
Obviously going to have to do some research on this, folks, as we don't know. But anyway, Livingston Daily Press, I've heard of them. I've heard of Livingston anyway. And they say, wow, Thad McCotter ought to pay for his electoral mess, which means, hey, you owe us $650,000. And they say here, According to the latest Federal Election Commission reports, McOtter's congressional campaign account had $121,152.66 on hand because they had raised that thinking that he might run for re-election, right? McOtter has said he intends to donate whatever remains at year's end to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And that's wonderful, but I'd have to say, isn't that in Tennessee?
St. Jude's?
Yeah, St. Jude's. It's in Tennessee somewhere. Memphis.
Nashville
or Memphis. But nonetheless, if you're going to donate it to somebody and you're not going to return it to the people that gave you the money, because maybe some was just cash, you know, in the dark back room, you know, and shoved in your hand.
Pay for the mess.
Well, I'm saying, donate it back to the city, and I'm sure this is what they're suggesting here. That's an excellent institution, surely make good use of money, but McOtter ought to first consider the people he represented in Washington for 10 years and the taxpayers he saddled with a $650,000 bill for special election. His old campaign account would cover at least some of the costs, so they think he should give it, I guess, to the state and or the city clerk's offices that have that extra cost. And that seems logical to me, certainly.
Definitely logical.
As they say, you know, St. Jude's is a good cause, but will he get a tax deduction on that because he donates
Maybe
it?
That's the
I mean, you know, that's a nonprofit, but so is the state of Michigan a nonprofit. So I think you get a tax credit either way, if that's even possible from campaign funds that you raise. And so that, by the way, that primary is going to be September 5th in the old District 11, Dearborn Heights, and some other strange areas over there. They said here the old one includes the northwest section of North Dearborn Heights. That's, of course, there's going to be confusion there between the new primary area was used for an August 7th election.
Right.
So who are you in the old district and where do you go vote is going to be an interesting question for all these people. I suspect there's going to be a very, very small turnout. In fact, that new person is only going to serve for like 2 months anyway. So, in a way, who the heck should care, except...
Isn't it like 6 weeks?
You should always care. Maybe the big bill will come up in the U.S. Congress, and that his might be or her might be the deciding vote.
But isn't it possible that that person that's, the, for lack of a better term, the interim or the replacement person, can they can run for in the general election then?
Yeah. Oh, I didn't read it all the way through. Federal election regulations don't allow McOtter to directly donate the money back to the local clerks. They say he could, however, give it to the state Republican Party with directions to distribute among the affected cities and townships. So they could pass it through them if they wanted to. This would be permissible, assuming the state GOP was willing to follow his request. That might be an iffy assumption, considering that McOtter has probably burned his bridges to the Republican establishment by, say, screwing up. Can we say screwing up on the air? I'm quoting the paper here. What should have been a shoe-in re-election for him. And the special election was called because, again, if you remember, and this has been on the major news, so we probably don't have to talk too much about it on this show, but he resigned his seat July 2nd after briefly promising to wage a write-in campaign to keep it. He failed to qualify for the August 6th primary ballot because his office filed a stack of obviously, it says here, fraudulent nominating petitions, the origins of which are now the subject of a criminal investigation. And I think there was already, since this was written, this editorial and put it in the paper here. The prosecution team has said it was people in his office that are responsible.
Yeah, his campaign staff. From what I heard, they had like just, four of them there.
Just because he was their boss, he knew nothing of all this fraudulency. That's called deniability, right? Plausible deniability.
We can't tell you this because, exactly. I mean,
just like Rupert Murdoch said about all the phone tapping in England of elected officials for his newspaper. Didn't know anything about it.
The cigarette people on Capitol Hill, when they testify, same thing.
Right. They never look at the reports done by their own research scientists.
I didn't know it was causing cancer.
Yeah. They probably on purpose they wouldn't read those reports so they could plausibly deny it. I hate to be so cynical, but that's the way things often happen until we know otherwise. So McOtter could have finished his term, or quit sooner, so the special primary could have been held along with the August 6th election. So either way, he's let down a lot of people and will cost taxpayers a lot of money. So talk about sour grapes, you know, because you missed the deadline and you had fraudulent signatures which caused that. And, I guess he was a little distracted by his effort to run for Republican presidential nominee. But, you know, it takes a lot of ego to be a politician. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of great people, you have to believe in yourself very strongly in order to achieve things that are very difficult. And in fact, to make other people believe in you, I think you have to strongly believe in yourself.
Absolutely. The passion's contagious.
However, that is a trait of a psychopath.
I was just about to mention that I've read that they're psychopathic.
Well, there's a test.
Behavior too.
There's a test for being a psychopath now, and I've just watched a TED Talks lecture. That's TED.org/talks, and these are prominent, intelligent people around the world who do 6 to 20 minute presentations. And there's dozens of them every week now available because TED conferences are all over the world now, and amazing variety of topics. But one is a review of all the criteria for being a psychopath, and I just watched that this morning. And of course, even as the presenter said, he qualifies as a psychopath by 12 of more than 100 different criteria.
Wow.
You know.
That was only like 6.
Like general anxiety. Well, I think we all feel a little bit of that, so I think we're all psychopaths.
Right.
But you know, and it's just it's crazy the extent to which the health professionals seem to think they need 131 mental disorders and 120 ways to be a psychopath that would demand their services for a small fee, of course, and that's just wrong. You know, just like depression. Okay, if it's clinical depression, which I think is the worst category, then you're unable to do a normal day's work. And you're not very nice to other people in the process. But all these other levels of depression, do we really need shrink help? You know, in the 1950s, if you were sad, you were sad, and you dealt with it, and you knew you probably would get over it. You know, disabling mental illness or dangerous behavior caused by mental illness, I can understand that. But, well, anyway, McOtter obviously has a big ego, and he felt so hurt from a number of ways people let him down. They didn't think he should be president, or his campaign workers did this illegal stuff. He just had to up and quit. Well, whoop-de-doo. And maybe it was best for him or his family, and he was getting a lot of criticism. But I think he's getting an awful lot more criticism from everybody now. And I hope maybe
so
he
too.
Reads the Times Herald or the Livingston Daily Press, and I hope he can contribute that money back to the Republican Party. And I hope they will do the right thing and give the money to the various states, the state and or the local clerk's office first of those municipalities that had to do that election. That seems only fair. And if it is 10 grand in Dearborn Heights, which has to be the largest chunk of that district 11, their old district 11, then his $121,000 should easily cover the clerk's cost for the municipalities that have to do this.
And I know on the part of Dearborn Heights, they really need the money.
Well,
who doesn't, though, you know?
It's just another example of elected officials, or they don't really all have their act together. If you watch C-SPAN, you listen to their speeches, it almost makes you want to gag. Is this person smarter or what? How crazy can this person be? Did I vote for this person? If you happen to, if you did and you didn't realize what they really have to say at length about the variety of issues, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to all of us, the level of incompetency in our elected officials. Of course, you know, public opinion says, you know, confidence, faith, belief in U.S. Congress is at the lowest point ever. I think only 6% of the U.S. population now thinks that Congress is doing a good job.
Yeah, that's horrible.
In general. So that means a majority of those people you don't think highly of, I guess.
But yet they still keep getting elected.
Well, I know, election time, because not everybody votes, first of all. What would happen if everybody voted? And what would happen if everybody really knew what these people are believing and what they're voting on and how they're voting?
Right, not just voted, but an educated vote.
Yeah,
right. That's key.
Not just going in and picking a name because they're representative of certain parties.
I like his hair. Yeah, he's got nice hair.
Well,
he's got a nice tie on.
Yeah.
To segue somehow here, editorial in the Press and Guide from last Sunday, and good for the Press and Guide, they have two editorials this week, but the one from last Sunday, one for each paper, that Michigan's Department of Natural Resources help is definitely needed at Detroit's Belle Isle. And, you know, I've gone to Belle Isle many times. I still take my daughter and granddaughter. I know they go to the Great Lakes Museum and also the...
the Dawson Museum?
Yes, the Dawson Museum. And the... where all the plants
zoo,
are.
The
Arboretum.
Conservatory.
Conservatory, yeah. Arboretum, whatever it's called.
Conservatory.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful
and,
place.
And that's still nice. And someday maybe we'll get money enough to open the aquarium, which they had to close for lack of funds.
And
that's a nice resource,
it.
Yes. Yeah. And but it's now, according to the emergency manager ruling recently, going to be control of that regulation is going to be given to the state of Michigan. Of course, that's going to cost them some money. And of course, there's a debate on should you start charging admission to the users of it. Obviously, there's a lot of money that has to be spent to keep that park. And I see nothing wrong making a state park out of it, but it's going to take a lot of money from the state or somebody to maintain it properly. And whether or not it should be supported by additional cost, like, I don't know, $5 a car?
Well, could they do
or some sort of monthly pass, like maybe the state park pass,
exactly,
which could be annual, and it'll get you into all state parks.
If they
the same
started
cost,
doing that, I would like to see the zoo get reopened, because that was one of my favorite things to do.
Right, that's the not the Detroit Zoo, but the
Belle
zoo, Belle Isle Animal Petting Zoo, sort of. Joe, have you gone there a few times? I assume.
Yeah, I've been there. It's been a while, but it's been a while. But I remember, like you mentioned, the zoo as a kid. You know, you could pet the animals. That was kind of unique.
Yeah, well, yeah, the big supposed wooden to walkways that you can walk on.
The ones that weren't wouldn't eat you.
They had some. Some problems with people killing animals, though, too. People coming in at night and
really
and cutting up a few animals. That's before it closed. They had issues with that, too. No, they didn't use them for food. It was just malicious damage. Oh, let's go see if we can kill a deer. Oh, yeah, right. It's a real big, brave person. They're already penned up, after all, so it's not much of a challenge, I think, except running a little bit, whether it was a prank or initiation or who cares. So, I mean, they need proper protection for all those resources, and they need them reopened. It's another thing, as I said, about the millage that passed to support the DIA. There's so many great cultural institutions and areas in Detroit. Do we need a millage for every darn institution? I mean, the Detroit Zoo is holding its own, I guess, but that's cost a lot of money, and that's still being funded by the city of Detroit and getting grants from other places too. And they've really done a great job of upgrading that and making that a tremendous resource. And I'm amazed that they don't need more local support for keeping it and upgrading it the way they have. It's a wonderful place, by the way, folks. I went there last year. They have a lot of special programs. It's great for kids all year long, too, even in the winter, which is the last time I was there. I was amazed how many indoor exhibits and dining choices. They have a nice cafeteria there, even in the winter.
Are they a nonprofit?
Yes.
So they have this thing coming up, I think it's in the end of this month or beginning of September, called the Zoo and Brew.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have a bunch of local breweries come in and they set up all over the park. And
that
seems really cool. I want to check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. The animals will look a lot different after.
I was going to say, what's the effect on the animal experience? But
do not feed the animals.
Yeah, don't get in the cage with the
animals. Will say, we're sure glad we're not drinking like those crazy humans. You know,
glad we're caged up.
Yeah, keep them from us. And, of course, they don't really use many cages anymore. They were always known for a sort of an open architecture. I mean, the animals can't roam freely, but they're not limited to very small cages. In some cases, they have to use some cages in the wintertime for some of the animals. But it's really a very commendable operation out there, the Detroit Zoo, as well as the DIA. But do we need a special millage for that? There is a problem, and this is why the editorial was written too, is that maybe the state can't really maintain it well, and maybe the state will just close it down. There are several levels. I mean, you need the elected representatives, like Republicans, mostly from outside of Detroit, who are in control of the Senate and the House, to vote yes on additional support. Because right now the DNA doesn't have money enough to run the Belle Isle, in addition to all the other parks.
DNR?
DNR, yeah.
Right, that's what I was going to say. They have no money either. So you're talking about Belle Isle right now.
Yeah.
Honestly, and I don't mean to sound naive, but is there a lot of traffic now on Belle Isle?
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of people? Okay, because I haven't been down there in a long time.
The editorial said 5 million people use it each year.
I used to go down there like three times a week. 5 million times.
Yeah. I think that's total passage. I don't know if they're counting the cars. They're probably counting the cars twice if they're same persons, but 5 million visitors in a year. And some of it could even be, a tourist destination for some of the two institutions that are left there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we know the Detroit Science Center near the DIA is closed now, that they have no money for that.
I thought they closed then reopened.
Let's hope. I read three things in the last month that said that they are closed. Oh,
okay.
But I hope not.
They must be.
I hope not. You know, that was a great resource and very close to the Cultural Center and the Detroit Historical Museum and Public
the
Library.
Down there, sure. Yeah.
Well, you know what I fear is going to happen eventually is that, yes, like you said, we're going to need millages to keep all these things open. I fear that.
Isn't the price tag at the zoo? I don't know what it costs.
It's like
another
$14, I believe.
But isn't that what you're paying your property taxes for anyway, or your in Detroit income taxes? I mean, isn't that what the city government should be providing? The trouble is, city government is broken. They don't even have money for basic services.
Right.
So that's the problem short term. I heard someone with an ungrounded idea yesterday. We need a big idea, and then start over. Like. You know, the cities, and this has been true across the whole U.S., they don't get a very high percentage of the money that goes from their taxpayers to the federal government. That they get less return to do good things for their area than people living in rural areas, percentage-wise. And, you know, if you look at how does the state of Michigan support Detroit? How much money does it give to the city compared to what it gives to the rest of the state? It also short circuit Detroit in terms of education.
Oh,
okay, because
yeah.
the state pays for education, and so the problems you have in the city are much more costly problems to solve and to resolve and to keep the place maintained. So they should be getting, according to this person, a lot more federal government support. Well, I think they should get a lot more support from the state of Michigan government. But again, majority of people Republicans, majority of the Republicans are from rural areas. So supporting Detroit is never a priority for them. Never something they think would be any benefit to their own areas, yeah. You know. But it's, you know, we can't let any of these institutions go down, whether it's Belle Isle or Detroit or education for all those kids that are left in Detroit. It's a disaster. So I'm not sure if the answer is federal funds. You think the elected representatives in U.S. Congress from this area, who majority of which from Michigan are not from Detroit, you think, and then our two state senators, how would they, well, our state senators are Democrats, they would probably be in favor of more federal support for Detroit if it would pass. But
the zoo's not even in Detroit.
It's in
Royal Oak. Right?
Royal Oak, Detroit area.
Is there any funding?
It's owned
from
by the city, though. It's owned by the city.
Right, I understand. Just sort of like Camp Dearborn is owned by Dearborn, but it's not
right.
Milford.
Yes.
But does it get any money at all from
I think
that
they
area?
Do.
Okay.
Oh, from other areas
from other
in
areas.
The Detroit, I don't know.
I
but
would imagine Royal Oak.
More research. Research.
Yeah, research.
Jeez. Yes. Now, when do people on the mainstream media ever say we need more research on that? They don't. They just keep blabbering on like Fox News and even MSNBC. You know, in fact, it was pointed out this week that the cover story in Time magazine, and Time magazine used to be a wonderful weekly news resource for the whole nation, and now it's run on a shoestring budget, so they don't have much money for good writers. They have no time to research it. Their cover story, whatever it was, their cover story has been proven factually wrong in 7 or 8 different ways, and Time now says, and this is their official statement about, we're not going to do a correction.
No rebuild.
Because that was all we knew at the time we published it.
So.
We don't have time to check the facts. They actually said that.
Gosh, that would save me a lot of time.
You know, so they're not even going to do a correction in the next issue when they have more facts?
Yeah.
No, because it would look bad for them that their cover story had factual errors and the whole basic premise was wrong. Got that? Not true. False. You should never believe it in a million years. But they admitted they didn't check their facts. Sort of like New York Times finally admitted they didn't check their facts on the war in Iraq.
Sure.
Before it started, they said, oh, these are all good reasons. Yeah, we should go to war. Later, a year or two later, not just the weapons of mass destruction, but all the other rationale that was presented was all fairly bogus, if not totally bogus. General Colin Powell, in his autobiography, said he knew the facts that he presented at the UN were not verifiable.
So he knew the stuff
it was
he
his
was
job to make them sound like they were totally true and they only led to one solid conclusion.
He didn't say they were wrong. They weren't verifiable, which is,
yes.
You know,
oh, okay.
It's maybe intentionally vague.
Right. He had to give the impression they were leading directly to the conclusion that there was weapons of mass destruction. And that was a reach that he felt was not justified, but he was taking his orders, yes, sirree, Bob, from the president, and they told him to make that argument, and he made it as well as he could. But he knew there wasn't enough evidence for it actually to be believed. But guess what? The UN believed it, in more or less.
I believe not Time, but Newsweek is going digital only. They're not going to print anymore. If that hasn't happened already, it'll be soon. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time, obviously, before. I mean, because if you save the money on printing costs, then you can pay the writers a little bit better. And I'm sorry, as a writer, that's what I want to see. You know, and I don't care if it's online or in print.
Well, absolutely, that's the model. Except online means it's going to be a daily thing, and there's even more chance to not check your facts.
Absolutely.
So you still need the weekly publication to sort out and analyze the bigger picture. You know, so what are all these accumulated facts or even inaccuracies from day to day, what's the big picture after a week? Or even a monthly news magazine is valuable because you'll take all those individual daily and weekly facts and you'll get an even bigger picture, which is even more correct, hopefully, yeah, if you do your deductions properly.
You analyze it even more.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's a theory. So there's value in reading this. And, of course, as I said, books, nonfiction books on major issues of the day. They take a few months to write, at least, if not a year or more, and it takes another couple of months to get them published. And, oh my gosh, they're 300 to 500 pages long, but that is closer to God's truth, if there is a God, you know, because of the amount of research, fact-checking, and the scope of the time that they were able to blend it all together in an appropriate way. And, of course, you can find books that are oriented, again, to one interpretation or the other, but at least they have a tremendous argument, a tremendous number of facts to support their points of view one way or the other, with the exception, and here comes an opinion, and remember, these are not necessarily on the show opinions from Henry Ford Community College, faculty, staff, administrators, or students, Ann Coulter's books that I've read a few just for a joke. It's amazing. She blabs just like she does on TV, and she really doesn't have any facts at all. It's all just opinion. Democrats are evil. You know, they're all godless. They're, you know, I mean, it just, and so what evidence do you have for that? Doesn't have any evidence. You just, well, that's just the way it is. They've always been that way, and they're always going to be. Well, thank you, Anne. I don't need your book, because that's not what books are for. You can ramble for, you know, your 30-second blurb on soundbite on Fox News if you want to, and everybody can love it or not for that, but don't put it in a book, please, unless you've got some sort of evidence and can connect the dots there, which she is not able to do usually. Okay, moving on. We're almost at the halfway point. So we're going to have a Jim Hightower commentary, just one. Jim Hightower, jimhightower.com, has many opinions, 2 minutes long each week, and he has editorials that appear all over the place, various syndicated locations. And he is definitely a populist. And that doesn't mean he's a progressive Democrat, but he is for things that are good for all the people. That's right, all of them. And if you pay attention to his editorials, you'll know that he has a lot of statements about crazy Republicans, usually. Sometimes a couple of crazy Democrats. I mean, they're doing things as a representative, as a politician, that just shouldn't be done for the good of all the people. And most of the time, and he's had many against Rick Perry, the governor of Texas, because he's... He lives in Austin, Texas, Jim Hightower himself, and Mitt Romney has not been treated well by him, as you might expect, but of course, interesting points of view there. So I try to pick, on purpose, the Jim Hightower commentaries that that aren't quite so partisan, although I think it doesn't take much of a leap to figure out which side Democrats or Republicans are on. So this is one of his opinions from this week about food manipulators trying to deceive voters. We'll be back with more WHFR Journal, local news, and alternative views right after this.
An old adage says, never buy a pig in a poke. But what about a poke hidden in a pig? That's different, say the corporate profiteers behind the startling number of our food products that now contain genetically engineered organisms, altering the DNA makeup of everything from corn to pigs. Yet, even though GE Foods pose serious health, environmental, and economic dangers to consumers and farmers, the profiteers want to keep the very existence of such contents hidden from consumers. No need to put that information on food packages, insist industry officials. Just trust us. No. In consumer surveys, about 9 out of 10 Americans say they want GE foods to be labeled so they can decide for themselves whether to buy the industry's hype. That's why public support is so strong for California's Right to Know initiative that would require food companies to admit using GE ingredients. So, how have the manipulators and deceivers responded? By doubling down on manipulation and deception. Bioengineering giants like Monsanto and such food powers as Kellogg's and Kraft are putting as much as $100 million into a PR campaign to lie about the safety of these DNA-altered foods and to scare voters with false claims about skyrocketing food prices if the initiative passes. Posing as the consumer's friend, the Coalition Against Costly Food Labeling has sprung up in California. It's a PR front group funded by such friends of ours as Grocery Manufacturers of America and the Council for Biotech Information, which themselves are political fronts for the usual corporate suspects. This is Jim Hightower saying, why are they so desperate to hide the true content of their own product? Because they have something to hide. For more information, go to organicconsumers.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
What do you think about Jim Hightower's comment there? The food, our food, it's what we eat for, what we have to eat, and we need healthy food. The last, by the way, a segue here, the last Tuesday, Dearborn Farmers Market was this week. So don't think about Tuesdays. Is this Tuesday the week they're going to have? No more. But still on Fridays through October from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Bryant Public Library in West Dearborn, the great Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market with local vendors of good food. Yeah. Also coming up, when is it? Tonight.
Yep, 5 to 9.
Yep, tonight, 5 to 9. The food trucks are going to return to that same parking lot at the Bryant. And they were already there a couple weeks ago, and they're coming back. So some of the – is that it, Dennis?
Yep, thank you. Yep, that's it right there.
So just some of the offerings, okay? And these are food trucks. It's actually a food truck organization. Oh, my gosh. And
they are good.
Dessert.
Yeah,
real good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so one of them, and they're so they're known. They're real professionals. They're not just a run of the mill. Somebody gets their minivan together and scoots out there with stuff from their kitchen. But they're making a business out of it. And there's many places around the Detroit area where they're going with their trucks. And this is a big deal in other cities, just starting in Detroit. And so one is the El Guapo Grill. That's fresh Mexican fare. One is called the Mac Shack. They have vegan Mac bacon. Mac. And what the heck is Papa Surf Mac? Smurf Mac.
It's blue. Something blue, right?
But they are talking about what? Macaroni?
I would imagine.
They're not talking about computers.
Yeah.
They says the name says it all. Excuse me, I don't understand. It must be mac and cheese
like
or something.
Or a Big Mac, you know, like a Big Mac.
Mac
yeah,
Apple?
But that's, they can't, that's trademark. They can't use that as trademark, yeah, so right. It can't be a burger.
Right.
Somebody's going to get sued there. Concrete Cuisine, a number of gourmet wraps like chicken and hummus or pulled pork. All kinds of other things they offer, not just one thing at each of these. The People's Pierogi Collective. I don't like pierogis, but that's okay. That's okay. If I ever tasted a really good one, I bet I'd like it.
I'm Polish, so I have to.
Okay. Adobajo del Sol. True Spanish. Not untrue Spanish, but true Spanish cuisine. A new addition. They weren't here last time. Frank's Anatra. It says, not your average hot dogs. And the truck they serve them on is pretty neat, too.
Yeah, these aren't your local ice cream trucks that drive through the neighborhood. These are really
nice.
No,
but
nice
this
trucks.
May be in the shape of a hot dog, like Oscar Mayer.
I have to see this.
And who was the famous Oscar Mayer driver as one of his early jobs in his early life? Paul Ryan.
Okay.
Yes, VP, the Republican VP, and when he was young, of his jobs was driving an Oscar Mayer Wiener truck.
No kidding.
I'd like that on my resume. I would. There was one permanently stationed at Henry Ford Museum.
Is it still there?
Want to see it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, no, it's a big part. They have postcards, and they sell little Wienermobile toys for kids.
That's
so
pretty cool.
It's very essential part of the collection, of course, of Americana, pop culture, you know.
Yeah.
I remember being in Europe in the 60s in a little town in France, and by golly, one day everybody was saying, oh, come out, come out. Well, they said it in French, of course. Come outside, see what's coming down the road. And a little rural town in France. It was the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. Driven by Paul Ryan. No, it wasn't.
Probably,
no,
he was Jerry Lewis.
I don't know who was driving, but they were everywhere, you know, and it's great fun. And Westbourne Market, you know, they hate to be not part of everything because they're a market too, mm-hmm. although not a lot of local vendors. I'm sorry, I've been over there recently, and they've got good fresh vegetables and fruits, and they dropped their prices a little on those, but their selection has decreased, I thought, overall. Nonetheless, they're going to have their own signature gourmet market. They'll be grilling up their in-house burgers with snacks and toppings to add. So Westbourne Market's going to have a truck out there, too. And then there might be more.
There's a dessert truck, too.
Oh, yeah. Treat Dreams. Dessert at the food truck rally is a no-brainer. Homemade ice cream and ice cream sandwiches.
You might want to mention that comment, too.
Unique flavors. Okay, here's a comment. This is from Patch.com, and the comment is from our friend, Mary Jo Duravage, listener to the show. Don't forget about the music tonight near Bryant Library, too. The Beatles music begins at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
So get your food from across the street and then come and enjoy the music until about 9 p.m. Is it across the street?
Yeah.
I thought the trucks were in the Bryant Library.
Nope.
They're in the parking lot next to it.
They're in the towers across the
street. They're across.
You know where the two parking structures are? They're right there.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And then there's a band, I believe it's called The Beat. They're a Beatles tribute band, and they're going to be performing.
Is that right near Ford Field?
No.
No?
Well,
okay, here's the official description. The second of three events. It's the lot between the West Village parking decks off of West Village Drive. Now, that's south of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
between Military and Howard Streets.
Where the structures are.
Right. Okay.
I was thinking it was the north side.
No, I thought so, too. In fact, I thought it was in Pizza Popolis parking lot last time, but I guess it wasn't even there. So this time, if you're looking for the trucks tonight from 5 to 9, definitely it's the West Village parking decks and the lot between them off West Village Drive between Military and Howard Street, so it's south of Michigan Avenue. Now, they're also going to have live music and an official after party after 9 o'clock at Moose's Martini Pub. I guess that's indoors.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there's also going to be the Beatles music cover. Tunes by not a reuniting of the original Beatles,
no.
But
Ringo couldn't make it.
Begins at 6:30. Mm-hmm. Sounds like fun.
It does.
Yeah. All right. So that's good food and good times in Dearborn. Just a part of it. Oh, got to mention, I guess, too, the Ide Festival. Okay, the Ide Festival is not the, and I found this out today. I did research. This is amazing.
First of all,
it's not the Ide Festival or the Ed Festival. It's the Ide Festival for us who are not Muslim. I got it from Access today. The woman was quite surprised that I called just to find out the pronunciation of something she knew very well. But that's the way it goes. You know, we got to spread the info around. It's the Eid Festival. The Eid of holiday or observance, if you will, is a day or two after the end of Ramadan. So Ramadan ended last Saturday, the 18th, and Eid was the Eid at the end of the festival, at the end of Ramadan. There's actually an Eid at the beginning. Well, anyway, it's a long story, but a lot more Muslim holidays and observances than I thought there was, and I haven't even looked at all of them now. But this is coming up, and it might be fun, multicultural and all that. There's actually going to be an Eid festival that is in the spirit and in recognition of Eid, which was last Monday, the 20th, this Sunday, the 26th, and it's going to be right next to the Centennial Library, and it's going to be like carnival and food, and it's called the Eid Festival. Okay.
So it'll be the other side probably of the center.
It's going to be on where the soccer fields are.
There it is. Yeah,
right next to the Centennial. Not the soccer fields at the center, but
right.
The soccer fields that are closer to the Centennial.
West
that's
the
where they're
Centennial.
Going to set up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just west of the Centennial. Right just immediately east of where the new City Hall is going to be.
Yeah. For sale sign's still up. When will that come down? I won't believe it till that's down.
Oh, well. Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe they're checking the city's credit.
Speaking of which, do you
see
wanna,
if the check's going to bounce. Because
wanna,
the city hall has definitely said they're going through with the buying that. So,
do you want to buy a library?
Right, $595,000.
$590,000. I mean, you
for
can't,
Snow Public Library.
That's a wonderful location, right? Telegraph and what is it?
Books Princeton. Included?
I doubt it.
No,
I
think no, they're selling off the books.
Yeah. But that goes for, up for sale after September 2nd, I think, and they wanted bids in by the 29th.
Yeah, I just read that on Pitch, I think it was, or right. No, it was Dearborn.
Right, there was, a plea at the last city council meeting that I read about in which they made a plea. They said, look, it only cost $220,000 to operate that place.
$250,000.
Well, it says about $250,000 there. I heard $220,000 in that presentation, but whatever. What's $30,000 more or less?
Sure.
And, you know, they pointed out the cost overrun for leaf pickup this year, so that loose leaf pickup, not leaf pickup, that's when it's in the barrels or the bags right. at the front, but the loose leaf pickup is where they have to have separate trucks to come by and scoop it up once every week or 10 days from in front of your house and then sweep the street because it's all that dirt and leaves and twigs and that are left behind. And so that was a cost overrun on it. So loose leaf pickup is costing the city $820,000+ a year.
Wow.
But that's a lot of streets in Dearborn. So then this goes a period of about 2 months, month and a half, but they usually have to extend it every fall. What would you rather spend, folks, $820,000 a year on from the city budget? Keeping Snow Library open. The people near Snow Library would love to have it still open. Right. That would only take a portion, a fourth of the cost of loose leaf. And I don't need the loose leaf cleanup. I mean, there's all kinds of problem with loose leaf cleanup, folks, and that primarily is they don't do a great job cleaning it up. They never come on the day that I'm ready for the pickup. And if they have a lot of pickup on one day or bad weather, then it's delayed by another couple days. And so you got all those leaves getting wet and moldy and slippery and cars parking in them. And if they're not wet, the cars parking on them could start them on fire. And so there's all kinds of problems with loose leaf pickup. Personally, I think it's a service we don't need. If you got a monster big front yard, though, well, first of all, you probably have a lawn service, and they're just going to get off easy by sweeping it all into the street. Tell them to bag it. Come on, bag it.
You don't have many leaves, do you?
I don't have a front yard.
Okay.
I turn my front yard into a forest.
Meaning it's like a rain garden?
No, it's legal in Dearborn if you're doing landscaping. So I put in trees, bushes, flowers, ground cover, and I have very little, just on the edge, just for the token grass thing. And several people in my neighborhood, Springwells Park neighborhood, have done the same thing.
Oh, cool.
Sure, some of the neighbors don't like that. Every yard should have only grass in the front, but luckily there's no rule about that, and I don't have to cut the front yard.
Right, exactly.
At all, except that little area around the side. In fact, my daughter, who actually does the yard work these days, who lives with me, we do have a backyard, and that's got a nice area of grass in it, and that's good for the granddaughter to play on and other activities. But she has changed now. I always had an electric mower. She always had a gas mower at her previous location, noisy and polluting and so on. She tried my electric mower and was always getting trapped in the cord, wrapping around her neck. It wasn't a cordless type. And I said, well, come on, you're smart. You know, you can figure out how to use the cord. And no. She pulled out my old push mower that I had and used it much. It's a hassle because I have a lot of twigs that come down, and with a push mower, a single twig will catch in there and you'll go flying. I mean, it'll just stop that spinning blades no matter how fast you're going.
How often do you have to sharpen those blades?
About once a year, maybe.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah, more.
You're talking like the old school
push
mowers. I was looking at one of those.
Yeah, they got a sort of a rotary blades, you go, they spin and they cut off the grass. Supposedly, they cut it off in actually a more healthy way for the grass than the mowers that cut in a circular way. I mean, in the flat blades going around. Yeah. I don't know the difference there, but so. She cuts the grass. I don't even anymore. I don't even realize she's done it. She says, "No, it's good exercise," and she's got to walk the same amount of distance as pushing an electric mower or a gas mower.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to walk too much faster. It's just a little bit more resistance.
Yeah.
So it's you know, she's the only one in the neighborhood using a push mower. I was the only one using an electric powered mower. But you don't need that whiz-diz whoop-de-doop-de. Kind of yard, I don't think, you know, where every little seed is vacuumed up. And if you want it to look like a carpet, just buy an outdoor carpet, okay?
Save
my grandfather
water.
Always said, just pour in the cement and paint it green. You know, that's what he never did that, but he was just because my my father always cut the grass for him. But you know, there's better ways to live in this world and just make a little bit of change, and it's not that much different. It's just like the people getting into the fall here with the blowers. They're going to be raking leaves, and they're going to be blowing them somewhere right. into the street, I guess, for $820,000 a year, city tax money. But they, you know, they most of them are not wearing headphones like we are in the studio, so they're damaging their own hearing, and they're damaging the hearing of all of us in the neighborhood. I mean, there's sound pollution rules in Dearborn, and I swear somebody ought to give a ticket to these people with these blowers, because they are louder. In fact, probably some of the gasoline-powered lawnmowers are louder than what the regulation allows in Dearborn, too. Mm-hmm. I don't know anybody's ever given tickets for that. Well, everybody uses a loud gas mower. Everybody uses a leaf blower. Well, I don't think they should. You know, especially not 9 o'clock Saturday or Sunday morning, because I'm trying to sleep in late. Okay, that's my problem. But they're not healthy for you, the people using them. And guess what? They're getting no exercise, and it takes longer to blow, you big blowers, you, than it does to actually get the rake out. And I've checked. So I can rake faster than they can blow the leaves. Because the leaves never blow the way you want. And if it's a little bit windy, they're going to blow back in your face, right. you know. So it's not a precise science. It may be fun to stand out there with your gas-powered blower making all that noise and spending 2 hours for doing what you could do with a little arm movement in about an hour, you know, or less. Then it's a question of bagging or whatever, and there's easy ways to do that. So there's my comments about yard maintenance. And what do you want people to do? Maybe you want to tell your council people. Maybe they will respond about the $820,000. They think that, everybody in Dearborn wants that loose leaf pickup. That's essential. Well, I don't think so.
Grew up, we didn't have that.
There you are.
Gosh, you're old.
Well, they still don't have in Detroit and many other communities, of course. I mean, they're just too expensive and kind of outrageous. Okay, moving on. We have only 10 minutes before Highway 61 begins with the Best in the Blues with Joanne Kay, and we'll get started with that, as I said, in about 10 minutes. One thing I was going to look up, just we were mentioning other activities coming up, the annual Smoke on the Grill, which is a fundraising outdoor barbecue benefit at Dearborn's Ford Field, Ford Park, as they try to call it now. The mayor always is supposedly at the grill helping to cook burgers and hot dogs and that. And I think it's $30 a person, maybe a little bit less if you buy your tickets in advance. It's not until September 27th. But the press release is still in this week's Times Herald and Press and Guide from the 22nd. It's interesting to me, the press release, wonderful, wonderful time, and get your banners for your businesses to be displayed there, too, to show your special support of the good fellows. They didn't put down the time of the event, September 27th, which is a Wednesday, I think. But when? When does it start? It's dinner time, I guess.
Yeah.
When does it start? When does it end? How can somebody write a press release or either paper put this in without realizing that the time isn't there? I'm sure there'll be a big ad the week before or something, you know, in the paper again, because it's still about a month away. But, remind you that the Henry Ford Community College Christopher Durang Plays Festival still has this one more weekend, tomorrow night at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 2 p.m. There's a review in the Times Herald from this last Wednesday by Susan Suchita. And great, humorous, funny, four plays. She goes into detail about each one, but spoiler alert, maybe you don't want to read that.
Right.
Highly recommended. Great, great plays, all by the contemporary playwright Christopher Durang, all part of one admission, one ticket. And that's this week at the Adria Auditorium on the main campus, Henry Ford Community College, 8 p.m. tonight, tomorrow night, Saturday night, and Sunday at 2 p.m. only. So don't miss it. Last weekend, great reviews, funny. We all need a good laugh.
Can I mention that the Dearborn Heights Fire Department has an event tomorrow at Parkland Park?
Mm-hmm.
It's the Chili Cook-Off, the 20th annual Chili Cook-Off. And I spoke with Phil Hall, a fireman at the department, and he said that at the time we spoke, which is probably about 10 days ago, he said that at that point they had 18 different chilies. Mm. He said some of them are off the charts hot, some of them are a little more creative. And I know that, Jay, you, at least at the college here, you contribute your own home recipe, don't you?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Well, the event itself is free, and I think that to sample some of the chilies, it's like $1 a piece. And all of the proceeds go to the charity, which is a burn camp for kids. It's pretty cool.
Because they ate too much hot chili.
Well, I know, actually. There's
it's not
more
internal burns they're not talking about.
No, not at all. And that is, like I said, Parkland Park tomorrow from noon till dusk.
Noon till dusk. You see, I read that too, Dennis, and I didn't see the time. And I was trying to figure out how they're going to make money. It said it's free. So if it's free, that means you should be able to eat all the chili you want. So they're just asking for donations of a dollar each, or they're actually demanding it?
Well, actually, I think it's going to be a suggested donation.
Okay.
At the same time, there's a lot of other things that are going on there at the event, like face painting, and they'll have the fire truck out there. So there's things for
and
kids.
And the location is?
Parkland Park.
Parkland Park.
I was just there for the senior citizens picnic.
Okay, in Dearborn Heights, of course.
In Dearborn Heights, and that's off of, it turns into Paul.
Okay, well, try to Google Parkland Park, Dearborn Heights.
I had to follow somebody to get there.
I didn't know you were that old, Dennis.
Yeah, I'm pretty old.
You went to a senior citizen picnic?
I was.
Come in?
Yeah. It said you take, Paul turns into Ann Arbor Trail.
Thank you, that's it.
And you go down, as it winds around, I think it's before, just this side of Outer Drive.
Yeah, it is.
And then you...
It's right on the right-hand side.
Yeah, if you're going
I hope they have a sign up somewhere.
They do.
Another way you can get in there is on Parkland Street, which is...
They can't see you pointing in the studio.
No, they can't. They can't.
Joe's pointing here, so I wish we had video for that.
So at least I'll be there.
Okay, but it's a residential street off of the...
But there is a sign as you go in by, I saw it, but I'd never been there. It's a huge, beautiful park.
Yeah, there's like three levels or...
Yeah, something like that. And then the creek goes right by it or the river. So I'm going to go and I'm going to eat as many bowls of chili as I possibly can.
Yep.
You heard it here.
Well, I guess we still have a couple of weeks to party, although classes have now started at Henry Ford Community College, and they started yesterday. And so the campus is very busy and will be very busy again next week, which will be the first full week of class here in the fall semester. I think they will still allow... I'm not sure how they're doing late enrollment. I thought they were saying that if the class is already started, you can't get in. I thought that was going to be a new policy, so I haven't seen anything on that. So sorry if you didn't make it in, folks, but we're already going crazy over here. But, of course, the Labor Day weekend is going to be starting up. I need to mention, for those of you that don't read the papers or the mail from your local schools, the start date for... the local schools is not the same in every community.
No,
that's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So you're talking to your neighbor over the fence and they're in a different city or something. It won't be the same. It seems the Dearborn Public Schools will start back on Wednesday, September 5th. You know, I thought they were supposed to start after Labor Day, but I guess it doesn't say when after Labor Day, okay? Because Labor Day is obviously Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's off. And I would assume the Dearborn Public Schools want to have some sort of day back for the teachers.
Sure.
And that may be what they're going to do on that Tuesday, September 4th. But it says the Dearborn Heights District 7, Crestwood, and Westwood are starting actually the day after. That is September 4th.
Okay. And so, maybe the teachers come back before the holiday.
And that's just for public schools. Who knows when parochial schools might start. That article may or may not talk about that, but we don't have time to look in there. So be sure to double check. Don't assume, we'll send the kids back the day after Labor Day. Some schools, like Dearborn, the kids do not start back until Wednesday, September 5th.
Doesn't it depend on how the kids are behaving? Because if they're behaving bad, I'm sending them back as fast as possible.
Send them somewhere.
Yeah. No, it's
Sterling Town Center.
Exactly.
I thought it was interesting. Dearborn Heights, I don't know if you heard this too, Dennis. No varsity football will be happening this year.
For Annapolis.
At Annapolis High School out there.
Yeah, they have no money.
Well, no. That may be true, but who does have money as a school?
True.
But their football team had too few eligible players.
That's right.
Who showed up for practice.
I'm sorry, I'm thinking.
Eligible means academic qualification.
Right.
Now, the school board got together, whoop-de-doo, to change that. They agreed to suspend all athletic eligibility policy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let all the kids that are failing play football instead of studying to pass their classes. That's the stupidest thing anybody could ever do. So that's my opinion to the school board of Dearborn Heights. How dare you say that playing football is more important than passing your classes? You know, so I'm a strong believer in athletic eligibility.
And I think in the opposite side, Dearborn is no longer has pay to play. In other words, I think that student athletes can play for free, whereas up till recently they had to play.
That was a big, I did announce it on this show, if anybody listened a few months ago. But yes, that's true, and that's great. So if you want to be part of any sort of extracurricular activity at the Dearborn Public Schools. It's all free now.
So and it's not just sports, correct?
I think it goes to every
music and
sort of extracurricular. If it's extracurricular, it's free.
Right.
But with apparently the Michigan High School Athletic Association does have a lower eligibility requirement than what Dearborn Heights had. But the school board, it says here, they wanted to suspend the whole eligibility policy, but they didn't do it quick enough, so that's why they can't, they didn't have enough people volunteer or come out for the team that were eligible under their somewhat higher than the state of Michigan standards. And shame on the state of Michigan for lowering their eligibility standards. But nonetheless, the junior varsity will still compete.
Okay, well, there you go.
So maybe someday they'll have a varsity team.
Yeah.
Does a junior varsity not need eligibility requirements, or they had enough people who were eligible to?
I don't know. I mean, again, more research.
Good question.
Well, that's what we're here for. We got more questions than we have answers, but
that's right. But that's provocative.
That's the idea.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what we're around for. All right. So it's WHFR Dearborn, and we're waiting for Joanne to arrive to start Highway 61 in just a couple moments. A few more quickie topics here from my list. Let's see here. The editorial from Dearborn Press and Guide that I mentioned from this last Wednesday is about the U.S. Congress. Oh, they must be Democrats at the Dearborn Press and Guide. They want Congress to help Michigan farmers because of the drought. Many farmers, like especially cherry farmers. It's interesting to me that blueberry farmers are doing a great time in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
There's fresh local blueberries everywhere. Apparently, they weren't fooled by the early warm weather, or their plants weren't hurt by that. And then it got colder again. But some the fruits and maybe other crops too have been really hurt by the unbelievably hot weather early on, and also the drought.
Well, friends of ours own an apple orchard in South Lyon, and they lost their entire apple crop this year to the tune of $2 million.
Yeah.
So there's, I mean, this is very real.
Right. Yeah, and you know, this is like one of those disasters. This is, well, federal government should never do anything. Well, excuse me, for national disasters, whether it's one state or several states, the federal government has to have the money. And right now we have no reserves or budget really for any kind of significant disasters. So you just try to borrow more from China, I guess. Well, that's just wrong. That there is definitely a need for a federal government, and I've got a few other things that I think the federal government has to do and do well. Got to hold them to a high standard if they are the federal government, I think, and in spite of the irony or the oxymoron of that statement. They're saying that various U.S. congressmen from Michigan now have bills that they're proposing, whether it's Dingell or someone else, and they want to get more aid to the farmers to hold them over until next year at least. And I know, as you may know, Dennis, with your friends who are farmers, that small farms are on a shoestring.
Oh,
they're always deeply in debt.
The margin's so
yeah, and because they have to go in debt to get the feed and to get the seeds and the other things, the fertilizers or whatever, and the margin. So, and we need small local farms. We don't need big farms. We don't need the corporate farms because they do terrible things that I don't want to go into now. But they just really want to, you know, keep the bottom line strong by genetically modified crops, and I don't trust those. That's my opinion. So, good for the Press and Guide in supporting that, and good luck in Congress for getting the Republican majorities to help Michigan farmers. We'll see if they care about us, have any conservative compassion. Compassionate conservative, that's what George W. called.